The following is an AI reading of my blog called
Privacy in Payment Networks, Crypto vs. Traditional, FATF Rules.
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
Non-crypto payment networks like credit cards require association with a name. A billing address is often needed and may be verified at times. Payment card security relies on knowing specific numbers, card number, expiry date, and CVV, which are shared with third parties, making it essential to verify some non-printed data. Certain information cannot be stored by the operators, like the CVV. Some payment gateways validate the billing address. This step has become somewhat redundant due to the introduction of 3D secure payments or services such as Google Pay and Apple Pay, where transactions are verified through an additional factor, for example, SMS confirmation or approval in the card issuer's app. The billing address also aids in risk assessment. If a user is accessing from a Russian IP address while the card is issued and used in Slovakia, it raises concerns of theft, leading payment networks to frequently decline such transactions. Cryptocurrencies provide solutions to these issues by implementing electronic signatures and irreversible transactions. The service provider does not require knowledge of their client's identity for making payments, nor do they need to be concerned about chargebacks or fraudulent activities. Once a payment is confirmed within the network, merchants can confidently guarantee that they have received funds irreversibly. Another factor contributing to reduced privacy is the obligation of providers to accurately charge value-added tax VAT. As many individuals become aware that selecting IAM from Hong Kong suffices for electronic services since Hong Kong does not impose VAT, some providers collaborate with card issuers to verify billing addresses, thus making it more difficult to bypass VAT payments. Other fiat payment networks face similar privacy challenges. Additionally, the collection of customers' personal data is not limited solely to retailers and payment networks. As I mentioned earlier, PayPal, for example, has terms and conditions stating that it can share your personal information with over 600 entities. Regulations like the OECD CRS, FATCA, and others even impose an obligation on every provider of banking, financial, and payment services to automatically inform the tax authorities. Anti-money laundering regulations in turn force them to block transactions or inform the financial police. All these information shares are automatic. Once certain conditions are met, it's not a case of, after all, I'm making a small turnover or I'm not doing anything wrong. This data is sent, processed, and retained for a long time. The first and fundamental problem with automatic data sharing is, can the recipient protect it? The recipient is often a government institution. In Slovakia, we have experienced that the state institution cannot protect even the most sensitive data on health status and PCR test results for SARS-CoV-2. And we're discussing a technical hack. The second, more probable attack vector involves selling data to an employee with access to it. However, government institutions aren't the only recipients of data. Marketing firms and credit bureaus also receive information. Visualize that when you make a payment, an information firework is launched, sharing details about that transaction with various third parties with whom you don't necessarily have a voluntary relationship. A different issue arises because the payment network operator likely knows your complete purchasing behavior, including what and where you buy items. In Slovakia specifically, following the introduction of the e-Kassa system, data in an online accessible database reveals not only your purchase location and cost, but also the exact products bought. The details printed on the receipt will be directly transmitted to the financial administration. Of course, unlike an invoice, the receipt does not directly mention your identity. However, when you pay using a card, it's possible to connect the identity with the receipt based on the terminal and amount details. Moreover, this information is stored within systems for extended periods. I find it bothersome when bank employees examine my account activities in an attempt to sell me additional products. It's evident that any bank employee can theoretically access all my account movements and obtain sensitive data. Not just theoretically though, there was a known case in my country where a bank employee, Philip Rybanek, misused this information. In this specific instance, the court determined that the bank employee was guilty of committing a criminal offense. Therefore, traditional payment networks are considered the worst option when it comes to privacy, as they display not only the time and amount, but also the location of your purchase, the store's name and terminal location. It's crucial to note that we do not require the customer's identity to offer most products and services. We may be obligated by regulation, but it isn't necessary for the actual provision. When selling virtual servers, phone number services, domains, web addresses, access to software as a service, an ebook, or an online course, knowing the customer's first name, last name, or address is not essential at all. If I lack this information, protecting it becomes unnecessary. Cryptocurrencies do not inherently associate an identity with payment transactions. Creating a cryptocurrency account does not necessitate providing personal details like your email, first name, last name, or address. A wallet-signed transaction suffices for making payments. Consequently, cryptocurrencies facilitate compliance with government regulations such as GDPR. If I don't possess personal data, there's no need to protect it. From this perspective, cryptocurrencies preserve both the privacy and security of the payment at the same time. That's Goffy and the crypto travel rule. However, the invasion of privacy is making its way into cryptocurrency payment networks as well. The story of financial regulation is a complicated one, but I think it is a very interesting one. Most people think that the way that anti-money laundering regulations and many others are created is probably like this: officials of the European Union, for example, sit down with experts, try to come up with sensible rules, and then put those rules forward as a proposal to be debated by a commission and later the parliament. This gets approved, and then the parliaments of the individual EU countries adopt it into their legislation. This is the visible part, which comes after the rule has been in place for a long time. So what is the reality? It works like this. FATGAFI, a non-profit and non-governmental organization, provides recommendations to help combat money laundering. They also create watch lists featuring countries or organizations that aren't taking enough action against money laundering. To show their commitment to fighting money laundering, a country or bank in the payment network must accept the FATGAFI recommendations. As this is the consensus standard within the majority of the payment network, participating entities need to demonstrate they are fighting money laundering by implementing these recommendations as rules and enforcing them with other partners. The European Union's AML5 serves as an implementation of the FATF-GAFI recommendations into a coherent legal framework. Many of these rules have been enforced by banks and countries even before regulation was adopted. For instance, if someone wanted to send money to the United States, the correspondent bank would ask them about their activities against money laundering. The easiest way to address this is by demonstrating that they are implementing a standard. Consequently, the adoption of rules in the banking network occurs through mutual coercion within the network and eventually translates into written guidelines. It's worth mentioning that regulation for the banking network is overseen by a non-profit organization located in the OECD building in Paris. This entity has no official legislative power and isn't elected by anyone. Despite this, it can create rules followed globally, not just by members of the OECD, EU, or any other organization. The FATCA and OECD CRS regulations were adopted similarly, as they were virally disseminated through the network effect. In a simplified manner, think of it as if you want to do business with us, you have to follow these rules. The FATGAFI has a second role: enforcement, which involves monitoring money laundering activities. For instance, they found that Panama had not directly implemented the FATF-GAFI rules into law, but instead fought against money laundering in their own way. Consequently, in 2019, Panama was placed on a watchlist of jurisdictions at risk from a money laundering perspective. This decision wasn't based on specific cases of proven money laundering, but because they chose to fight it differently. As a result, those following the FATF-GAFI recommendations must specifically screen all transactions with Panama, slowing down international trade in the process. Panama has been trying hard to get off this watchlist so much that FATF-GAFI has almost put forth a law for MPs to pass. The OECD CRS rule has similarly been extended. What does this have to do with Bitcoin? One of the FATCAFE recommendations is to tag cryptocurrency transactions. If a transaction is worth more than $1,000, it should somehow verify the identity of the sender and communicate it to the other party. This information doesn't need to go directly through the blockchain. Protocols have started emerging that allow such an exchange of personal data. The first to follow this rule are the exchanges supporting deposits and withdrawals in government fiat money. These need to be plugged into the classical financial network for their business. The FATCAFE travel rule has already been adopted and is being enforced through the financial system, regardless of whether it's been approved by national or EU parliaments. These rules are now being extended to other VASP or virtual asset service providers, which is a new term introduced by FATCAFE. This includes wallet providers, payment gateways, and practically everyone who is involved with crypto in any way. One of the recommendations that will be implemented in 2021 is to ensure that VASP only accept cryptocurrency transactions from wallets belonging to other VASP. Self-hosted or anonymity enhanced wallets are considered high risk for money laundering and should be carefully examined. Because investigating transactions can often be unprofitable, this recommendation may sound nice but could lead to a ban. We'll have to wait and see how it will be implemented in practice. To illustrate the enforcement process, let's consider an example. 1. First, we declare that untagged BTC transactions are used for money laundering. 2. Next, we create a standard for transaction tagging. Banks and exchanges will begin implementing this new regulation because they fear losing their partners in the fiat payment network or being disconnected from it. 4. The FATCAFE organization monitors compliance among countries and institutions. If a country ignores these guidelines, they are considered non-compliant and labeled as a money laundering center, which lands them on a watchlist. Being placed on this watchlist makes international transactions significantly more difficult for the country in question. The watchlist applies globally to all financial transactions, not just one specific segment. Consequently, countries may choose to enact these measures rather than face restricted access to global trade and being labeled as a money laundering center. FATCAFE and the consultants will provide the precise wording of the law, translating it into the local language and accurately paraphrasing the sections of the recommendations. Members of Parliament pass the law in Parliament, generally unaware of its content and origin. In an effort to curb money laundering, FATCAFE will post a press release on their website highlighting successful cooperation with another country and issue a case study showcasing their accomplishments. Each deposit and withdrawal from the exchange will be marked with our identity name, surname, address, residence, etc. The previously considered innocent KYC data, which was collected and shared with chain analysis firms or under court order at most, will now become part of our transactions. By the way, this information can also be populated retrospectively, as they were aware of your identity during withdrawals and know which transactions involve the withdrawal of your funds. This applies if you underwent a KYC exchange, dystopian vision of introducing financial tracking into cryptocurrencies. In time, states may force merchants to accept only cryptocurrencies marked as such. If a person wants to use cryptocurrencies to pay for anything legally, anonymity will be gone. And so the individual cryptocurrency coins will be divided into legal, marked with an identity, and illegal, which will be unusable for legal purchases. I don't mean that some cryptocurrencies will be legal and some won't, but the balance in the wallet will be marked and unmarked. Think of it like banknotes, some are stamped, and you'll be able to use those to buy at the grocery store or hipster cafe, while unstamped ones will only be usable in the grey and underground economy. Technical solutions to increase privacy would be unusable in such a case. CoinJoin or other mixing and privacy enhancing methods would simply turn the cryptocurrency units into unmarked ones. Using this mixing technique could be connected to our identity, leading some financial authority to question why we've chosen an anonymizing tool for our funds. A more concerning outcome than not regulating or banning cryptocurrencies, a possibility many thought was the worst case scenario, resulting in crypto can't be banned would be their legalization. In this case, only officially stamped crypto will be allowed for use. With such a potential future in sight, why should we bother with cryptocurrencies? This dystopian reality already exists within the fiat world. Cryptocurrencies act as internet protocols that enable privacy and function like digital cash in a parallel economy. They are improving from a privacy standpoint, allowing for a parallel economy free of surveillance, even if approved uses remain monitored. We already see the first steps towards this dystopian future in the current Fat Gafi recommendations proposal.
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.